Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left at Cafe Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Hey, Francis.
How are you this morning?
I'm doing really well.
Controversial show we had recently.
Yeah, that was a lot of people talking about it.
With what's her name again?
Nancy Alexander.
Nancy Alexander, who is the woman whose husband owns the Houston Rockets.
Mm-hmm.
She
they're responsible for getting the NBA to convert from the leather ball to the synthetic ball,
which didn't go in the hoop as much, so they switched right back.
Which it didn't go in the hoop as much.
That was a.
So they switched back. Francis. I didn't know you were going to get a lot of basketball stuff. Congratulations.
Yeah, they did save a lot of animals, but the basketball. wasn't going in the hoop. And how is it you put it? It's like, because some guy that you're paying $26 million a year trained since he was 12 to get that particular ball
right.
in that particular hoop, and then you switched it on him? That's not such a good idea.
Yeah, he said no.
Anyway, so they opened a vegetarian restaurant in Florida called Sublime, which you can link mm-hmm. to the show, find out the information, and actually find out about her organizations with which we disagree, and her restaurant, which looks pretty good, but I won't go there because the proceeds go to support those organizations. And she's a vegetarian activist, and she's a vegan vegetarian activist. She's an animal rights activist, and in a sense, Mark and I consider ourselves animal rights activists, but
in a different sense.
We believe that you can raise animals humanely and still slaughter them for food, and that's a humane and normal practice. Whereas Nancy, it came out on the show, pretty much equates killing a rat with human murder. It's a bit of a stretch.
She did not say that, but that was the implication.
But she did not deny that when I put it to her.
I certainly inferred that.
And we came out in the end with the, of course it's a hackneyed example, but we always say this when you talk to extreme animal rights activists, you ask them a question. We said, you know, if there's two houses burning down, you have three dogs in one of them,
mm-hmm.
and a baby in the other one, which one do you save? And she really wouldn't answer the question. You know, oh, that's a ridiculous question. Oh, that's a hypothetical. I'm like, I know it's a hypothetical.
Well, she said, I don't know. I don't know what I would do.
And then finally we got her to say, I don't know what I would do. And so then I asked her, is it morally wrong to save the dogs and let the baby die? And she said, no, that's, you know, depends on the situation. And that's enough for me. Okay, you're a whack.
Well, I guess the part of this that surprised me so much is, you know, a lot of people listen to the show and a lot of people have been commenting to
us. Emailed, written, called, stopped us on the street.
Stopped in the restaurant. And most people say, yeah, what a crazy thing to save a dog or even your dog instead of a baby. Who would ever think of that? But a few people have been courageous enough, and I'll say courageous enough,
yep.
to tell me that they would save their dog over someone else's baby, that they would have to choose their own animal over someone else's baby.
Which is fine unless it's my baby and I find out about it. Then I'm going to feed you to your dog and eat your dog. No, I'm not really going to do that. It's very interesting. I'm surprised, and I'm very surprised at how many meat eaters
mm-hmm.
who would kill a chicken and eat it.
Right. One of these guys that we talked to is an experimental eater. He'll eat almost anything that you put in front of him. If he were in a Korean restaurant, would probably eat dog.
Yet would save his dog over.
Yet would choose to save his dog over a person, and I have no understanding of that. Whatever.
Well, I think for those folks, it's about the relationships.
I understand. I said in the show, I love my dog. She's been with me for 12 years. The dog I had before her, I had for 16 years. I'm a dog lover. I've lived with a dog in my house, you know, since I was 12 years old. But I just can't imagine how you could. I've also lived with babies in my house, and I can't imagine that any person
right.
would choose the life of their dog over the life of a baby. And I
someone else's baby. And
I don't get it. I truly don't.
And we're gonna get way philosophical for the restaurant guys, but I guess, you know, I am what animal rights people call a speciesist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I discriminate against other species in favor of humans. Yes, I do. Yeah, no dogs allowed.
And, you know, I don't know if some of you guys have seen this T-shirt, but Francis and I are both, you know, fans of PETA, people eating tasty animals.
As opposed to Mark is mocking the people for the ethical treatment of animals who fund.
See, I guess the problem here is I am for the ethical treatment of animals, but sometimes...
I don't think it's unethical to kill animals for food. I don't think it's unethical when one animal kills another animal for food. And I don't think it's that we are animals. I guess that, you know what, in a way, I think there's tremendous hubris to that, to say, well, how dare we kill an animal because we're better than all the other animals. The Dalai Lama eats animals.
But aren't we better than all the other animals? Aren't we?
Yeah, but I don't...
Doesn't religion say that? Doesn't, I mean, isn't that why we choose the baby over the dog?
But most religions...
Because we're better?
But most religions also allow you to eat meat. You're still also basically, a human being is an animal as well. It's where we come from. We live in the physical world.
Well, then I think you make an argument for the other side, then. You say if we're animals, then, and we know better, we're the only animals who know better.
Know better than what?
Why is the baby more important than the dog?
Because I am a speciesist, and we are the highest form of species, and I know that.
So is a lion more important than a deer?
To a lion, yes, it is. To the deer, not so much. See, we're part of the animal kingdom. I definitely discriminate against in favor of my own species. Yes, thank you very much. That's all I got on that matter. Speaking of which, let's go on to there is a move afoot. You know that we have a local around here in the Mid-Atlantic. We have a problem with Canadian geese. Canadian geese used to fly over us. They would fly from Canada down into...
Well, they'd stop. They'd get some water, maybe a little bit of food on their trek.
And they would go all the way. They'd go down south, right? Well, guess what? The Canadian geese, because of a lot of reasons, they don't know exactly why, have pretty much stopped migrating. They've parked themselves in New Jersey, and here they are.
New Jersey is a very nice place for Canadian geese for some reason.
Well, they become a real nuisance
to
be here year-round. They produce a lot of feces, and they're really pest birds. And there's a lot of controversy in suburban neighborhoods in New Jersey about how to remove these geese. There are...
No controversy. I got one.
Kill them.
Backyard to oven. There we go.
Well, that's the problem. There are a lot of... When they decide they have to be removed, there are a lot of groups that find it inhumane to kill these geese by whatever method you choose to kill the geese. And I think a hunt is a great idea. Allowing a hunt in rural areas, super.
Well, but what did they do a couple of years ago in Union County? They gassed all the geese and then disposed of them.
I thought
what a ridiculous maneuver that was. Why do we want to gas all these geese and then dispose of them? That is wasteful. I think that is a crime. There is something wrong with that.
Well, a Michigan citizens group fed up with Canada geese soiling the state's parks, beaches, golf courses, and shoreline has proposed an explosive from the explosive fowl population wants the geese to be culled and fed to the homeless. And there's a volunteer waterfront community in St. Clair Shores in Detroit suggests a mass euthanization and then donating the carcass to the homeless shelters, and I think that's a fabulous idea.
I do too. We should be eating these geese. We shouldn't be just euthanizing them for no reason, not for no reason to get rid of them as a nuisance. That's fine.
But you have all this meat, and you have people who are hungry, and why would you not use that meat? That's less respectful to throw away and have that go to naught.
I mean, even if you used it for dog food. Even if you're a vegetarian, you should still say we should use that for dog food.
Interesting point. I never thought of that.
You know, and it's not poison.
We have to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Mark and Francis of Stage Left in Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. Today we welcome Todd Lefkovic. He's the owner and manager of the highly successful New York Food Tours, which is an organization that allows tourists the ability to see and taste various foods and experience various neighborhoods like Soho, Greenwich Village, and the Chelsea Market on a guided tour.
Todd, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Hey, man, you know, my philosophy in life is I feel like my whole life is a food tour. How did you come up with the idea for a guided food tour? And I'll tell you, I see those people riding on the buses, on the double-decker buses in New York all the time, and I swear one day I'm going to get on one of those. But I think, you know, somebody should throw them a bagel or something as they drive by. How did you come up with the idea for New York food tours?
Through many years of researching tourism, we found out that when the typical traveler goes to any city around the world, they are basing what they do on eating a lot right now. Besides all the cultural activities they might do, the sightseeing, they're going to revolve everything around eating. And, you know, with all these great places in New York City, why just go to the few that, you know, you might know about? So what we're trying to do is take people off the beaten track and show them where the locals go. And while we're doing this on a three-hour walking tour, people are tasting the food from a specialty food shop, ethnic eatery, learning about a specific few restaurants in the neighborhood, and then also finding out, you know, what to do at night if they wanted to come back, as far as jazz, blues, folk, poetry. So when they're done with the tour, they're very comfortable with the neighborhood, and they really want to come back and experience it as if they were a local.
Well, you know, New York City is famous for its kind of its highbrow restaurants and its super premium, you know, top of the top dining experiences. But as anybody who's from around here will tell you, one of the great pleasures of dining in New York City are those little kind of out of the way, hole in the wall places. Are those a lot of the places you're introducing people to?
Yeah, we're trying to introduce them to places that are not well known at all. Some of the restaurants have 20 seats. Some of the restaurants, you know, 30 seats. You know, cafes that have been around since the 70s, pizzerias that have been around since the early 70s also. So they're real local establishments, mom-and-pop run establishments, and a lot of these places are not well known to even New Yorkers that don't live in that neighborhood.
How do you decide who makes the tour?
Through a lot of dining. We basically, we have a team of people. It's myself and the tour guides. And weekly, we go to different places and just walk in. We don't tell them who we are. We taste a lot of different foods over and over and over. And, you know, we check out a place from cleanliness to service, you know, of course, to the food. And then after about 6 months, if it passes our test, then we put it on the tour.
Now, how many tour guides do you have working for you?
We have five right now.
And how many people are normally on a tour?
Maximum 16.
You know, it's funny. I was talking with a friend who recently moved into the area, and she said to me, she said, you know, New York has gotten a lot, it's gotten a lot more friendly to me, because when I came here, I thought, you know, I just want to go back. You know, I'm here very briefly to go back, because it was just a matter of, like, look at those pretty lights, and there's really no context for it. And I think that's one of the hardest things for someone coming from outside of New York is to put things into context. Do you think you help with that, and do you agree with my assessment there?
Oh, yeah, 100%. What we're really trying, you know, what our tour provides also is that comfort factor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when someone actually steps out of the taxi to our meeting location, you still see a kind of a scared look on their faces. They don't know what to expect. They don't really know where they are. You know, they just came from their hotel in Midtown. And, you know, within like a couple of seconds, we really greet them the right way and kind of make them feel comfortable. And by the end of the tour, we've actually made friends with 16 people.
Mm-hmm.
They are very comfortable with the neighborhood, and they understand how to come back and really enjoy it the right way.
You know, I think that's a very important thing that you state there is, you know, we're all very familiar with the kind of tourism that's like, I'm going to spend 14 days and be in 9 countries in Europe, you know, mm-hmm. which is a matter of like running through the Louvre and,
right, literally you run up to the top of the steps of Sacré-Cœur and go, hey, this looks great.
Right,
and
exactly.
And then you run back down.
But your service helps people to feel comfortable in a neighborhood so they can come back. You said that there are folks from Manhattan or from New York City who take your tours of other neighborhoods, right?
Oh, yeah, plenty of times. For example, our Greenwich Village tour. If you live in Greenwich Village, and you work there, but you're not in tourism. And you go, you know, you do your daily business, you go to work, you go to the gym, you come home, you go out to eat. You really don't know your neighborhood the way we do, because what we're doing is constantly researching it. And a lot of times on the weekends, you know, these Greenwich Village residents, they see what we're doing. You know, at the beginning, they don't want to take it because they feel like they know the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll stand around listening to us, and then they'll say to themselves, you know what, I really don't know the neighborhood. And then in a couple of weeks, you'll see them on the tour with friends that are coming in from another state or wherever. And then by the end of the tour, they said to us, you know what, we've lived here for 10, 15 years. We've passed these places so many times, but we had no idea what was actually inside. You so, yes, New Yorkers take the tours. If you're, for example, from the Upper East Side, you're still a tourist when you come down to Greenwich Village.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Todd, I want to hear about some of the actual places that you take people to the tour on.
Sure.
Would you mind talking to us when we come back?
Sure.
We'll be back in just a moment talking with Todd Lefkovic about New York City food tours. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:25.
The place, Brooklyn, New York, post-World War II. An Italian-American woman named Catherine Lombardi cooks for her family. What's so special about that? Well, lots. Food was central back then. Good food handed down from the traditions of two countries. Food that filled the whole house with the sweet smells of garlic, tomato, and basil. No matter when you stopped by or who you were, you were sure to be fed and fussed over. Catherine showed her love on the plate and out of the pot. Any who were lucky enough to receive it never forgot. This is Mark Pascal from the Restaurant Guys radio show and Stage Left. I've just opened Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, and its mission, to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. So come by the bar, sit by the fire. Have some fresh mozzarella and antipasto. The manicotti and tortelloni are amazing, and the veal chop will make you cry. Our wine list, of course, without parallel. We've got to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. You see, Catherine Lombardi was my grandmother. Come let me show you where I came from.
Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, 732-296-9463 or CatherineLombardi.com. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis, of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. And our guest is Todd Lefkovic, whose organization runs food tours through New York City. Hey, Todd, why don't you give us your website so people know how to get in touch with you?
Okay, it's www.foodsofny.com.
So, Todd, what's on the tour right now? Tell us about some of the places that if you go on that tour this afternoon, you're going to visit.
Okay, we'll start out with the original Greenwich Village tour. For example, there's a place called Rocco's Bakery. It's been around since 1972. You're going to get a fresh-filled cannoli. And that's the trick with cannolis. I mean, if it's sitting in a refrigeration case...
That is definitely the trick with cannolis.
Hours and hours, not a great cannoli. Even though you might think it's a good cannoli, and it could be because it was just filled... it's still much better if they fill it for you on the spot.
Yeah, you have to be lucky that you actually happen to be in the store. When you see the cannolis already filled in the case, you have to be lucky to have a really good one that they just happen to have filled it within an hour or two.
That's right.
The best cannolis are filled right when you eat them, and they have that nice little crunch and snap to them.
Yeah, and the cannoli cream has to be nice and light. I mean, a lot of people, they're using some fillers and other things that kind of make it thick in you. If you can feel the sugar between your teeth, the sugar kernels, not a great cannoli. It has to be nice and smooth and light.
So after cannolis, where do we go?
Another place, it's called Joe's Pizza. A little hole-in-the-wall pizzeria. It's been there since 1972. The owner is actually, his name is Giuseppe from Naples, and what he specializes in is Neapolitan-style pizza. Very simple. A homemade tomato sauce every day. Their trick is using San Marzano tomatoes, good quality mozzarella cheese, thin, crispy, very, very simple. A lot of people know about Joe's, but to know how it's actually done and why it's so good, you know, we get into all of that also.
We're gonna put up a link to New York City food tours on our website so you can check this out. And even if you live in the area, it sounds like a pretty cool thing to do. We're going to listen to the news right now, but then we're going to come back and talk a little bit more with Todd Lefkovic about New York City. And I want to talk specifically not just about Greenwich Village, but about some other neighborhoods and about there are different ways to travel. There's the run-through-the-Louvre method of travel, and there's the find-a-place that you can come back to method of travel, and that's one of the things that I like most about this. We'll be back in just a moment or two. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:30.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey, 1450. WCTC with The Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back.
You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcasts on iTunes.
And today, we're talking with Todd Lefkovic. He's the owner of New York City Food Tours, which you can link to on our website, restaurantguysradio.com, which does some pretty off-the-beaten-path tours of different neighborhoods in New York City, all talking about food. You know, I remember I traveled when I just got out of college. I took a few thousand dollars that I saved up bartending, and I went to Europe, and I stayed as long as I could, maybe 5-6 months. And I know that my mission at that time in traveling around Europe was to find places as a young man and sort of get to know places. So I would go, and I'd stay for at least a couple of weeks in each place. And to get to know places where I could come back to. And for my whole life, the cities where I got to know when I was 24 are the cities I know best, Madrid and Paris and Seville. And I still go back to those cities. You know, sort of once you know a little bit of something and you're in the know, you meet other people who are in the know. Is your job to sort of give people that anchor that they can keep with them?
Yeah. What we actually do, which makes it very nice for people, we give them a neighborhood guide.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, once you take our Central Village Soho tour, and you're done with the tour, and you're staying wherever in Manhattan, or you're staying, you know, you live in New Jersey and you want to come back, we see it for the last 8 years, people still walking around the neighborhoods that we tour with our Foods of New York neighborhood guide. And in the neighborhood guide, it lists all the places that we recommend more than we actually show on a tour, because we only have 3 hours. And it gives all the pertinent information about the food and the prices from those establishments. And
now,
a lot of times you're already familiar with those establishments because we've been there. Sometimes the owner comes out, sometimes the manager comes out, and they'll speak to us about, you know, their special sauces or whatever they do that might be interesting to the tour attendees. So by the end of the tour, you really want to go back to just say 5 or 6 specific places. And a lot of times, you know, people will email us saying, you know, after your tour, we thought about going back to this place or that place. And then they email us again saying that, you know what, we went back 3 or 4 times, you know, during, you know, the last 3 or 4 visits to New York City. And, you know, we're comfortable with these places and they're fantastic.
Does any restaurant ever get kicked off your tour?
Yeah.
Or dropped, I should say.
Better,
more than kicked off, we'll say dropped.
Dropped, yeah, occasionally. It has to be for a bad reason. And the number one reason is cleanliness and service.
Mm-hmm.
If that kind of goes south, we will take them off the tour. But we'll give them notice. Say, listen, you know what, we see some things that we don't like. And, you know, if you're interested in cleaning them up, fine. If not, you know, we're not going to bring the tour here any longer.
You know, again, one of the things that I find is, and I travel a lot and I like to adventure. Whenever I go, I look for the new place that I haven't seen. But whenever I hit a city where I have, you know, a little place where I always get coffee or a little place that I'm always sure to stop for dinner, it always makes me feel more at home and more confident in the city overall. And I think that's one of the great things about this. The other thing that I like about traveling is if I can find a friend or an acquaintance who lives in the neighborhood who takes you on a tour, and as you walk down the streets, they'll give you a little bit of the history of the block and the history of the neighborhood and the, you know, the ethnic makeup of the neighborhood and what sort of went on there to form that neighborhood. Is that part of what you're talking about?
Yeah, I mean, our whole tour is a combination of food, history, culture, architecture, and local entertainment offerings. So when we start the tour, we let everybody know that's what we're talking about throughout the 3 hours. And we let them know that we go back in time about 150 years to let them know what was here, who lived here, and how the neighborhood actually got put together. And we bring them up to the present day. So they really get a full overview of what actually is going on. And it really, it's interesting because a lot of people used to just take the tour for the food. And then they started emailing us back and they said, you know, besides all that food information, we love the history of Greenwich Village. We love, you know, the culture of the neighborhood. And so it's the whole combination actually works much better than if it was just a plain food tour.
Well, you know, you're in New York City, and obviously there are amazing buildings with amazing history, and you're walking past these buildings. I think that a lot of us, even those of us who live nearby or live in the city, are walking past these buildings every day, just kind of forgetting what has actually happened in these places.
Right, exactly. You know, when most people walk by, you know, a specific, just say you're in the West Village, and you know, the neighborhood has like very nice architecture and charm, but you don't really realize that, you know, these houses were built in the 1830s,
mm-hmm.
and they're still around, and you know, the neighborhood's landmarked, and you can't touch it, and you know, the door is 150 years old, the doorknob, you know, it's been touched by, you know, hundreds and hundreds of different people, and you know, there's boot scrapers. Why are there boot scrapers there? So we go into all the little details, and you know, it brings the whole neighborhood to life.
Well, now, you started with Greenwich Village Tours, and now you've expanded to other neighborhoods as well. What other neighborhoods do you have, and are those neighborhood tours very different in the context
stylistically from the
Greenwich Village Tour?
Well, the formats are all the same. It's all food, history, culture, architecture. We started out in basically the West Village. It's kind of west of 6th Avenue. And then our next tour was Chelsea Market, and it's a Chelsea Market combination meatpacking district tour. So you're in Chelsea Market for a while learning about that. You know, a lot of people, they know of Chelsea Market, but they don't know that it was the original Nabisco Bakery, you know, back in 1898. So there's a lot of history going on within the building besides what's there right now. And then we go out to the meatpacking district, which, you know, a lot of people, when we first put it up on our website, they're like, meatpacking district, are we going to go into meatpacking plants? They really didn't know what it was.
That's funny. And for those of our listeners...
Which, by the way, would be very cool.
But,
so.
Yes.
But for those of our listeners who don't live in and around New York, the meatpacking district of New York in the last 10 years has become the hottest, sort of clubbiest, sort of restaurantiest district in all of Manhattan.
Back in the day, 4 a.m., the meatpacking district would be filled with, well... meatpacking,
yeah.
And now it's...
Meatpacking, yes, and transvestites.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It was the transvestite. You can still spot a few of those around, but not quite too many. That must be a very interesting tour, because when you tell people the history of it, they must not believe it.
They don't. And what we're doing with that tour is we go into the past, the present, the future. And, you know, they can understand the past because you still have 18 meatpacking facilities left. And the present is about, you know, the high-end fashion, the high-end restaurants, you know, the new hotels that open up there. And then the future is kind of letting them know that this neighborhood, it's still kind of gritty looking. It's going to turn into a destination. It's going to be like a Soho. It's going to, you know, a destination is Times Square, where people go all the time, or where people do a Times Square, but it's going to turn into something as close as a Soho. And, you know, for them to visualize that is kind of hard, but then when we give them the insight about, you know, the new High Line and all the gentrification going on the waterfront.
I mean, if you saw it 3 years ago and you see it today, you can see that
Cool is the neighborhood's landmark, so you can't tear down the old awnings anymore where the meatpackers used to back their trucks up into. The cobblestone roads have to stay. But there's a lot going on there. And, you know, what we recommend for people to do is we always tell them, if you take the tour today, even if you don't take it again, come back in another 2 years and stroll to the neighborhood. You'll see what an amazing change it was. And most people don't go to a neighborhood until it really is a destination. So we're taking them through it before it all happens.
Hey, man, I think what you're doing is great, and I think, who knows, one day I might take that tour myself. I think I knew New York pretty well, but now maybe I don't. We're going to link everybody to your website through ours, restaurantguysradio.com. Sounds like it's great work you're doing out there.
Thank you.
We'll be back in just a minute. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1144.
Let me talk to you about lighting, and specifically about how you can enhance the appeal of any space. Lighting is a powerful, emotional, and aesthetic force. It's one of the most important elements of design. More than anything else, it sets the mood and tone for an entire experience. A room pops or it doesn't based on lighting. Lights on 9 is a top-notch commercial and retail lighting supplier. Lights on 9 supplied all the lights for our award-winning Catherine Lombardi restaurant, inside and out, dining room and kitchen. Lights on 9 has everything from tasteful and stylish chandeliers to table and floor lamps to outdoor lighting for illuminating a building or walkway or a sign. At Lights on 9, the service is exemplary, expert, and knowledgeable. They ship anywhere in the continental United States for free. Their retail store is in the Galleria Shopping Center on Route 9 in Manalapan. They're open 7 days a week. Call them at 732-308-9166. That's 732-308-9166. Or visit them at lightson9.com. That's lightson9.com.
Hey, hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Captain Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. Food Tours of New York.
Yeah, we were just talking with Todd Lefkovic, who owns New York Food Tours, and they do a lot of it in kind of the off-beaten neighborhoods. He's not going to...
Off-beaten neighborhoods?
Well, like where people get mugged a lot, you know, in the off-beaten
neighborhoods.
It's
like the Stonewall riots. What's that all about? In the neighborhoods, the place is off the beaten path. Well, you know what's funny is when you do know a place, and you, Mark and I really do love to travel and to hook up with people.
Mm-hmm.
And being in the wine and food business really does afford us that possibility a great deal.
Honestly, truly, whenever I go someplace, I love being there with someone who knows the area. And
even
that's a lot of fun.
Even if they spend a day or two with you.
And the other thing that's a lot of fun is being the person who knows the area. That also can be a blast. I remember, you know, you were talking earlier in the show about the 6 months you lived or traveled through Europe. And the year before that, I spent a lot of time mostly in France, but I was staying about 45 minutes south of Paris for, I guess it was 3-4 months. And I did some traveling from there and spent a couple of weeks in London and a little bit of time in Switzerland and a few other places. But one of my favorite things to do was to actually do just what Todd's doing with Paris. A lot of friends from college and, you know, it was around that time when people were traveling a lot. You know, they were just getting ready to graduate college. And so a lot of people I knew would travel through Paris, and it was great to take them into Paris and kind of give them one of those tours of, okay, this is a really cool, there's a cool little restaurant here, there's a cool little coffee shop here, here's the Louvre, here's, you know, this little chocolate shop. You know, those kinds of things are great.
And I love when you get to know a place, and I recommend when people travel, especially young people who work for us, sometimes they'll take time off and travel. I recommend against, especially for young people, the drive-by tour of wherever it is you're going. Because if you have a week off, go spend a week in Madrid. You know what I mean? Rather than spend 2 days in Madrid, 2 days in Seville, 2 days in Paris, where you don't experience the city at all.
As a young kid, my parents signed up for one of those Spain and Portugal bus tours.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was one of the most dreaded. I can't tell you, and we were in Spain and Portugal, so it wasn't horrible, but it was one of the most dreaded things. You know, you get up, you get on the bus, you drive 4 hours, you drive, you know, oh, great, another, you know, there's another olive branch. Oh, great, okay, terrific.
And, you know, it's funny. I have a rule. It's like on every vacation I do one church, one museum. That's it. One cathedral, one museum. Other than that, I do a lot of restaurants. I will tell you, I had a funny story just because I Madrid is a favorite city of mine, and I go back when I can. And I was there. I got invited. I traveled as a young man with nothing, and he went to the cheapest seats in bullfighting season. That's where I got my love of bullfights. Okay, animal rights activist, pick up your pen. It's Francis at restaurantguysradio.com. But I go back, and I went alone, and I went with a friend to these bullfights, and I learned a lot about them. I went back recently with some guys who are also bullfight aficionados, but these guys are very successful men. One of the guys is very well connected, went to medical school there. We're very well connected with the bullfighters themselves. We got to dine with the bullfighters. We got to sit in the best seats. We got to sit right below the king's box. It was the best bullfight of the year that's very hard to get tickets to. I mean, these are like Super Bowl tickets, right? So we're walking out of the Regilones, right? There's a traffic jam by the Bullring in Madrid. I mean, it's out in the outskirts, but it's like Yankee Stadium after a game. And they're like, let's get a taxi. Are you kidding me? I mean, we're going to spend an hour waiting for a taxi. So what I did was I said, listen, I know this little tapas bar around the corner. We go around, we have some tapas waiting for the crowd to let out. Still not let out. And we wanted to go to dinner that night, and we were meeting the wives who didn't come to the bullfight, and we just couldn't get a cab. I said, well, come on, guys, we'll take the metro. And I was with five guys who had been to Madrid a lot, had never been underground.
Well, you know, I think, too, in the United States, sometimes the train and the subway systems can be dirty. They can be difficult to use. They can be hard to navigate. Whereas in Europe or even in Canada, in Montreal, these generally they're pristine.
Yeah, but
they're much easier to use.
But you still, I mean, if these guys had walked on with a limited amount of Spanish or no Spanish at all and tried to walk on the subway, getting out of the Bullring station, they might have gotten the wrong way, you know. And it's a zone system, and you sort. But it was cool for me because I had been to Madrid a number of times and sort of gotten lost on the subway and made the mistakes myself a number of times as a young man.
You had done it.
I said, let's take the subway back. You know, to the Ritz, which we did, and they thought, and we had a great time with it all.
We were the best dressed guys
on the subway.
I was just looking at some pictures back from that trip that I took as a young kid to Madrid in Portugal, and there's a picture of my dad fighting a bull. Okay.
What?
They used to let passers, you know, they used to let
Portugal.
The occasional person, yeah, not fighting, not with a sword, not to kill it, just to tease it with the red, with the red cape. And he's fighting the bull, and of course it's a tiny, tiny little bull.
It's a bullet.
Okay. If there's such a thing though as a tiny, tiny little bull. Because there's my dad with the little cape, looking petrified.
You know why? Because he was fighting a bull.
But it's a great shot. My dad is actually fighting a bull.
Did he win?
Did he win? He lived. Okay, so yes, he won.
I think that's...
They tied.
I think that's... Well, you know, I think in Portugal they don't kill the bulls, right?
Right.
And in Spain they do kill the bulls. And in Mexico they don't kill the bulls.
Well, it's a great shot. My dad is one of those adventurers, so he'll, you know, whatever it is, he's up for the trial. So next thing he wants to do is he's 70 years old. He wants to jump out of an airplane. I'm like, have fun.
Yes.
See on the, I'll be on the ground waving.
I don't know.
You look great. So you know what? We haven't done yet. We haven't talked about other tours in New York City. When we come back, we're going to talk about chocolate tours of New York City.
I know exactly the tour you're talking about. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:54. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Captain Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. You know, we were talking about food tours of different cities, and, you know, I had an apartment in the East Village for a long time. I've lived in Jersey City for 7 years now, and, you know, a lot of my social life is based in New York. So many of our friends are in the restaurant business in New York and Brooklyn and Manhattan. I would, after talking to this, I would like to take one of these tours.
It seems like fun. And it also seems like maybe you're going to get a little something out of it that you're not going to get from either your tour guide book or you're not going to get from just walking through the city. Because what I said to him was very true. You know, I walk down the streets of New York City, you know, a couple times a week, and you know what? I don't know what some of the history of some of the buildings. I don't completely understand exactly what's gone on there, and I think that'd be fascinating.
You know, I think people do that sometimes. The first time that I went to the Statue of Liberty was when I took guests from out of town,
mm-hmm.
and I can see it from my roof.
But you mentioned something earlier in the show, and it's something that I really want to avoid, and it's the double decker glass, you know, tour through the city through a pane of glass.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's almost like watching it on TV. You got to get out in the air. You got to walk around the streets. You got to speak to people and experience it.
And the downside of bus tours is you hang out with a bunch of people from wherever you're from
mm-hmm.
in wherever you are. Why not go to wherever you are and hang out with people from there?
So I talked in the last segment just for a brief second. There are these things going on in New York City also besides these food tours. Another type of food tour is a chocolate tour.
Oh, yeah.
There's a woman by the name of Carmen Botez who's doing these. She works for an online magazine called Chocolate Zoom. And they go around and they taste chocolate, of course. And honestly, I think the chocolate tour does a little more tasting than the food tours.
A chocolate tour? Is that like a chocolatier?
It's a little bit like that.
Oh, okay.
But she goes to some of the most prestigious chocolatiers in all of New York City. The three-hour tour stops at Christopher Norman, stops at Vosges, stops at Keys Chocolate, Maria Bell, and Jacques Torres. I mean, some of the preeminent chocolate makers in all of New York City.
And that's a three-hour tour.
It's a three-hour tour. There we go, Gilligan's Island.
For the courage of the fearless crew.
Those of you wondering, Francis and I are 41 years old and exactly Gilligan's Island age. So, but they even do these like chocolate weekends where you can go stay in a hotel. They'll pick you up. You get stuff from Chocolate Pizza Company. You have chocolate Mexican chocolate mojitos, and the chocolate weekend's $1,200.
Yeah, I'll keep that.
Maybe I don't need to spend a whole weekend.
Let me shorten your visit in New York too.
Hold on one second. We'll put a link up to Chocolate Zoom on our website.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's great.
I don't have the website in front of me, but we'll make sure we put it up on our website.
I think it's a great idea if you've got the whole weekend to spend focused on chocolate. But frankly, I recommend visiting Jacques Torres's mm-hmm. shop. He is the master of chocolate in New York, or Le Maison du Chocolat. But Jacques Torres is amazing. And if you're in Jersey, he's right through the Holland Tunnel.
Right.
And he's got a shop in Manhattan and a shop in Brooklyn. And you can go to the chocolate bar and get a hot chocolate there. even if it's hot outside. Absolutely crazy.
You're not afraid to and you can get a hot chocolate in warm weather?
And you can buy his hot chocolate mix for home. It's like a $47 million, but it's really worth every penny. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed the hour with the Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.